Today is November 21st, the year 2000. We're in Lansing, Michigan. I am Jeff Charlin, interviewing Ms. Ruth Jamison for the Michigan State University Oral History Project for the sesquicentennial of Michigan State to be commemorated in the year 2005. Ms. Jamison, you can see that we're tape recording this session. Do you give us permission to record the interview?
Yeah, sure.
I'd like to start first with some questions about your general personal background and educational background. Where were you born and where did you go to school?
I was born in Hall County, Nebraska, in the country. Went to country school through the 8th grade. Woodrow High School for 2 years. Then I went to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, graduated from high school there. After that, I had 2.5 years at Coe College.
Okay.
And my father was sick. I went home to help care for him, you know, help on the farm. And after 1.5 years, I went back to Coe and finished, got my degree.
Okay. So that was in the 1920s?
I graduated in 1930.
1930. Okay.
I started in 1925, but I was out for about 1.5 years.
What type of farm did you grow up on?
Well, just general farming.
General farming?
Corn, alfalfa, wheat, oats.
The studies that you did at Coe College, how was it that you got interested in that college?
I lived in Cedar Rapids for 2 years in high school. And so many students went to Coe. And I had my mother's sisters live there, and I could live with them.
I see. How was it that you got interested in math?
I always liked math in grade school, elementary school.
Did you have a teacher that was recognized that ability that you had, or?
I'm not sure about that, but it was a challenge, and I just enjoyed solving problems.
Did you, after graduation, did you go into teaching or?
Well, there wasn't much else for a woman to do in those days. And so I did get a teacher certificate. But I taught 1 year out in Nebraska, and I felt I wasn't a good teacher, so I didn't really work hard at trying to spend my life teaching school.
That was at the beginning of the Depression, wasn't it?
Yes, 1930.
Yeah.
31, 32, 33.
Well, how would you describe the job prospects?
Pretty poor.
At the time.
Tickled to death to get a job that paid $15, $20 a month.
Where was your job that you did get after?
Well, I worked at Coe for...
Right at the college?
For 3 years.
Okay.
But it was answering telephone when the dormitories began like that. And then I worked for the Dean of Women.
Okay.
For a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started to conserve money. And I was one of the last appointed, so I was one of the first to go.
Last hired, first fired. What were your duties as when you worked for the Dean of Women?
Well, just regular office duties. I never had any training in office duties, or I couldn't type, couldn't take shorthand, so I studied that myself. And by the time I got through with my career, I was pretty good at it.
Were there any self-taught books that you used, or was it just?
There was a young woman working in the office who helped me a lot, especially on shorthand. And then I rented a typewriter and a book to go with it, and I sat at the typewriter at home and worked and worked and worked. I was so proud when I could type 13 words a minute.
13 words a minute. You obviously sped up after that.
Had to.
Learned to type faster than that. How was it that you came to Michigan, Michigan State?
Well, my mother came from a large family. She was one of 13 living children and one of 9 girls. So she had 8 sisters, and they were all much interested in my mother's children, all of us, we were five. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want my life wasted, so they always showed an interest. And when after I got out of college and lost my job at Cole, I had an aunt who was here as director of YWCA. And she was a member of Zonta Club, mm-hmm. and knew Dean Conrad, Elizabeth Conrad, through that. And she knew that there was a vacancy in her office, so she called me and asked me if I'd like to come and apply for it. So I got on the bus and came, and I didn't get that job, but I worked part of the first year I was here as a graduate assistant, mm-hmm. and did office work. Got paid, what did I get paid? $35 a month.
You remember that?
$35 a month.
And that was in the mid-30s?
That was in the fall of 33.
Fall of 33, okay. Right in the, what were your impressions of Lansing when you first came?
I thought it was cloudy.
Cloudy?
But I've liked Michigan very much.
Mm-hmm. And your aunt, did she continue to live in the area?
She did for a few years, uh-huh. but then she finally moved on too, and I just stayed here. Mm-hmm. I had different kinds of jobs for the first few years, mm-hmm. and finally, I started work as graduate assistant, and then I worked at a bank, and then I came back and worked in the economics department as a full-time employee.
Okay.
And then I left to work at the Department of Conservation for two or three years.
Mm-hmm. In Lansing?
In Lansing, mm-hmm. the State Department.
Okay.
And then there was a vacancy in the president's office, and I heard about it, came out and applied for it, and worked for President Shaw for 3 years.
Okay. And that was from
1938?
1938. Okay.
August 15th, 1938, I started.
August 15th. Yeah. You remember anything about the interview?
Oh, yes.
Did he interview you personally?
Yes, and, uh-huh. and he interviewed me at his home because he wanted his wife to meet me.
I see.
And mm-hmm.
Were they living in Cowell's house?
No. They lived where Williams Hall and Yakeley Hall, and those dormitories are, used to be Faculty Row. Mm-hmm. And the president's house was one of the big houses on Faculty Row.
Yeah. My daughter's in Williams Hall right now.
Yes. So. That's nice.
So I know right where it is.
Well, they had some old buildings along the drive
right
there.
On Grand River.
And nothing new. Yakeley Hall was, mm-hmm. I think Yakeley Hall was there when I started to work.
Okay.
Pretty sure it was. Mm-hmm. But it was the only one.
Mm-hmm. How would you describe your abilities when you started with him in terms of what you had to do or your duties?
Well, I was scared to death. But we got along fine. Mr. Shaw was very understanding, uh-huh. nice. He left me alone for a week or so before he made any demands of me.
Uh-huh.
And he was very nice to work for.
Mm-hmm. What were your main specific duties for him, if you remember?
Well, opening the mail and going through the mail and mm-hmm. taking his dictation and arranging his travel.
And you did that with shorthand or the dictation? And
yes.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. The other things that you had to do, were there any, besides his travel, was there anything that?
Well, not very much because he was within a few years of retiring. Mm-hmm. He wasn't traveling too much. He made trips to Chicago mostly.
Mm-hmm. When did you first meet John Hanna?
Well, he was secretary of the board when I came, when I started to work. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether you know the old administration building, Linton Hall now.
Mm-hmm.
Our offices were upstairs.
Okay. The Dean of College of Arts and Letters is there now.
Are they?
Mm-hmm. And they've restored. They've restored the boardroom.
The boardroom.
Mm-hmm.
That's
beautiful.
That table in the boardroom was just beautiful when mm-hmm. it was new.
Mm-hmm.
And Fritz Mueller was the one that came from Mueller Furniture.
Oh.
And I remember his explaining how they made it.
Mm. It's in beautiful shape now. Again, so they
imagined it. It was good furniture to begin mm-hmm. with.
Mm-hmm. So were you working with John Hanna at the time? He was secretary too.
Well, I knew him real well because he was in every day,
mm-hmm.
and he was doing a lot of work and helping to run the university.
Mm-hmm.
And
did it appear as if he was being groomed to become the president?
No,
or
no, not really. I remember how pleased I was. A good friend of his secretary, Marie Mercer,
okay.
when he was in the secretary's office, and she and I were so pleased when we heard that the board was thinking of appointing him as the president.
Mm-hmm.
It was a real thrill for us.
Mm-hmm.
We thought it was a great thing for the university.
Mm-hmm. Did Marie continue on after he became president?
Oh, yes, but she stayed in the secretary's office.
Oh, okay.
And I stayed in the president's office.
Mm-hmm. And did you have to interview for that job too, or more or less you
just stayed there?
Stayed on.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What were the circumstances when President Shaw, when he left, was it a normal retirement, or did he anticipate it, or were there health issues involved?
Oh, no, it was his desire.
I see.
He was 70.
Uh-huh.
And he just decided that the end of June of 41, he would be retired.
Mm-hmm. Were you involved at all in the process for looking for a new president, or?
No.
Okay.
I mean, how
did you hear about that?
They didn't really look for a new president. They already had one.
Oh, they did.
I think the board members were completely sold on the idea of appointing Mr. Hanna as president.
Uh-huh.
I have no recollection of their interviewing or considering anybody else.
Uh-huh.
But if they did, I didn't know about it.
In that first year, obviously the war came
soon after
mm-hmm. he took over. What do you recall of that first year? Anything?
I know it was terribly, terribly busy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he was a hard worker and came to work early. Very well organized.
What time was he usually in the office?
Well, I came in at 8 o'clock, and he was usually there.
So he was there early.
He was there early,
mm-hmm.
and the mail came in right away, and I would open it and sort it, and he would usually dictate then and take mm-hmm. care of the mail promptly.
Okay. What were some of your other duties in that early time?
Well, I was worked alone in the office.
Okay.
And so I did everything that needed to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Answering the telephone and making appointments.
And you worked on controlled his calendar?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or kept track of it anyway?
Well, I had to.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there were always several meetings scheduled during the week, and mm-hmm. have to keep track of them, notify people of meetings.
Mm-hmm. What that first year with the war coming, was there, how would you describe the mood on campus at that time?
Oh, well, I don't know how to answer that.
let me rephrase it. How did the students react, let's say,
well, the
students to the news
were,
about the war?
The students were apprehensive, to say the least, especially the men.
Mm-hmm.
And Mr. Hanna had, I know he had a meeting of all the men students at the auditorium. And a lot of them used to, in those days, would come in and talk to him, mm-hmm. the students who were being drafted and applying for commissions and so forth. Mm-hmm.
So he counseled individual students?
Oh yeah, a lot of them.
Mm-hmm. Was the university involved that you were aware of, or how was he involved in the early years of the war?
Well, you know, we had the enlisted reserve on the campus.
Okay.
And organized classes, special classes for them. They had classes in foreign languages, but that they taught them the speaking language instead of the written language.
Uh-huh.
And they did a lot of work with the students who came to mm-hmm. part of their army training. So I remember Captain Payne of the Air Force, that's where he first came to Michigan State.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the war was over, he came and was head of the department in farm crops. I think it was farm crops in,
oh, I see.
In College of Agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a captain of some unit in the Air Force that was stationed on the campus.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of men, but they were not... they were marching through the campus, and mm-hmm. along the roads. And
was the process sped up educationally, or did they have to have a special curriculum? Or
yeah, they had a special curriculum.
Mm-hmm. Did how would you describe Dr. Hanna's work during the war? Just in general. You mentioned he was busy and he worked hard and that sort of thing.
I don't know how to... so long ago, how do you remember things like that?
that's true. I mean, that's kind of a general question. But he involved with... did he travel much during the war, or was he pretty much close to campus?
Well, he was pretty close to the campus,
mm-hmm.
but he did some traveling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Did your job change at all during that time?
No, I don't think so.
Okay, so you continued with regular
secretary. Routine office work.
Mm-hmm. In those years, did you have any contact with students in those early years?
Quite a few, yes.
Mm-hmm.
He started to, I don't remember when he started, but he had a, what did they call it? I think that was after the war, though, that they started having those dinners once a term, I think, with student leaders.
Okay.
Well, Spartan Roundtable.
Okay.
And the presidents of the different student organizations were included in the guest list, and they were supposed to come and feel free to discuss anything they wanted to with no holds.
Uh-huh.
So, and they were always interesting to arrange, and,
mm-hmm.
and there were a lot of student contacts then.
So you were involved with the sending mm-hmm. out the invitations
mm-hmm.
and
arranging for the meetings.
Okay. Where did they usually have those?
Yeah, at the union.
At the union.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Then they had place cards, seating arrangements and place cards. And
mm-hmm.
So it was always a big job to get that.
It was a formal dinner?
Well, it was a served dinner.
A served dinner, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. The any other contacts that you had with students?
Well, every term they had a dinner honoring the all-A students.
Oh.
And back in those days, we took care of that, too. Always impressed me that some of those all-A students, the reason they couldn't come to dinner is because they had to study for an exam.
They were studying.
Didn't have time to come to a dinner.
How would you describe the campus at that time?
Well, it was mostly the North Campus, mm-hmm. Circle Drive, within the Circle Drive, and always extremely friendly. Mm-hmm. Then, until the war, there was no smoking on the campus.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm.
And it used to be that anybody caught smoking would run the risk of being taken to Red Cedar River by students.
But the war changed that?
The war changed that.
The veterans?
The veterans came back, and a lot of things changed after that.
I'd heard about the green beanies.
Yes.
But that was another tradition that went out with the
that
returning
went out
veterans.
With the return of the veterans. Another one that went out was that they, you know, they came back adult men, and the alcohol rules changed on the campus. Used to be that anybody caught drinking alcohol was automatically dismissed, and they never put anybody out of school for drinking alcohol without his having a conference with the president.
Oh, I see.
So he used to see those kids.
Mm-hmm. Did president?
He was. I don't know how many of I would see come in, just scared to death because they were caught drinking, knowing that they were going to be suspended. And he'd talk to them, and always real nice to them. And when they went out, they'd say, well, thank you, Dr. Hanna. I always thought, well, thanks for putting me out of school.
Oh, no.
No,
the students were respectful to him.
But I think it just showed that his, that he cared for the students, and it came through, even to the ones in trouble.
Mm-hmm. Was after the war, what changes did you see or you experience with larger numbers of students?
Larger numbers, huge numbers of students. They had students living in Jenison Field House, you probably know that. And they had, then they had these Quonsets set up, and I don't know, they had them in the Union Building. They were putting up the barracks apartments. Some of them, of course, weren't ready, but they managed to find a place for the young men to sleep, and they got by until the buildings were ready. don't know.
Were the numbers of women increasing after the war too, or had they stayed relatively stable?
Well, I'm not sure about that. I'd have to see the figures.
Yeah.
I think it was fairly stable.
Some of the people that President Hanna worked with, the provost and or whatever, was it called the provost at that time?
Not that time.
Yeah, what was the title
of
the chief academic officer? Or
yes.
The president took much direct role?
They have dean of academic affairs or something, or something like that.
Who were some of those people? Do you remember any of them? Or some of his advisors that he worked with closely?
Well, he worked closely with all of the deans.
Okay.
And I think it was every Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock. They called themselves the administrative group.
Okay.
Would meet over in our office, and if anybody was late, they didn't wait for them.
Mm-hmm.
the meeting started at 9 o'clock.
9 o'clock.
No matter what. But they all worked together on an administrative group, and I think he got a lot of advice from the various deans and thought a lot of them. Some of them were very good.
Mm-hmm. Did you take minutes at those meetings, or
no,
were they more or less
no,
just
no, I didn't take
give
minutes.
And take? And,
no, I
But that was a key.
They had, I think somebody served as secretary, but I didn't. I didn't.
But that was a key group where he sounded out people. And
and I think they brought up questions. They brought up plans for future, and they felt free to discuss anything they wanted to discuss.
Mm-hmm. Who were some of those important deans that stood out?
Well, Dean Emmons, okay. And was liberal arts, and Dean Anthony was Dean of College of Agriculture, and my goodness.
Deans that now have buildings named after them.
And the deans of veterinary medicine. Mm-hmm. I heard Dean Bryan was dean for several years, died of cancer while he was still dean.
And that was Bryant?
Bryant.
Bryant.
I believe so.
Did what do you remember about some of the expansion that was going on in terms of the actual building and that sort of thing?
Well, they really worked on that a lot. And in the first place, I think Mr. Hanna had a lot of foresight in land purchases, mm-hmm. around the campus, because when I first started to work, there wasn't too much land south of the campus, and by the time he left, the farms extended, the property extended to Jolly Road,
uh-huh.
and I think right now it's even a little farther. But he was always buying up what little private property might be left within a section that the university was buying,
mm-hmm.
and. They did it in a way not to antagonize people who are the present owners. And you might be familiar with Mr. Bennett's and the Bennett property.
Mm-hmm.
I know they finally bought the Bennett farm, and Mr. Bennett was a son who needed, his parents were concerned about him, he was an adult, but they made an agreement with the parents that he could live there in the house on the farm as long as he wanted to,
mm-hmm.
and he did until he died. And they had arrangements like that with other people who could live in their homes until they no longer needed them. Mm-hmm. But the property at their death would belong to Michigan State.
So many of the farms were in private hands?
Well, they all were,
yeah,
I think.
All were, and then.
Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of foresight. I don't know what we would have done without the land being there.
The expansion to the south, mm-hmm. was possible.
And then they had this huge program of the self-liquidating debts on the dormitories.
Did you handle that paperwork, or were there reports? Or
no. I didn't do it. I just did the manual part of it, not the thinking part.
See,
back in those days, when we didn't have copy machines, we didn't have word processors. The only way to make a copy was to make a bunch of carbons.
Carbon copies, yeah. Yeah. Or retype it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you sent a copy of something to somebody, you made a copy.
Mm-hmm.
You, by the typewriter, you sat there and copied it.
Were there any things that came up in the performance of your duties that really made things easier for you? Technological innovations?
Well, there weren't very many, mm-hmm. during my career.
Mm-hmm.
The machines were just beginning to be used.
Mm-hmm.
And we finally had one that we could use. One of my jobs was to prepare the board agenda, which no longer is done in the president's office, I think. Not sure about that. But sometimes it would be 50 pages long and, mm-hmm. in single type. And we did finally have a machine where I could prepare the agenda and save the sheets. And then after the board meeting, the action of the board could be inserted. Mm-hmm. And the same sheets used to run off copies of the minutes.
I see.
Which was quite an improvement, I think.
Mm-hmm. Was that like a mimeograph or
well,
not?
Well, something like that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. How often did the board meet?
Once a month.
Okay.
Except during the summer. They had 1 month when they didn't meet.
Okay.
That's when those of us involved would take vacations.
That usually in July or August?
Usually August.
August.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Did you ultimately have any assistants to help that worked with you?
Well, yes, finally. Made a little office out in the hallway and mm-hmm. She would come in and do the dictation and type most of the typing. Mm-hmm. And we had the telephone arranged so that either she or I could answer.
And that was in Linton Hall?
Yes.
In Linton. Mm-hmm. I don't know if the arrangement is similar to what it was then. I think the office
yep.
is obviously still there. What was your title over the years, or how did that change?
Well, it was secretary to the president.
Okay.
And until, I don't know when it was. It must have been about 1960 or so when